My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to another episode of Inside United. This is a place where we meet a lot of interesting people that come in contact with us, and today we have a very, very special guest. I'd like to introduce you to a person that I have known remotely for a long time. About 26 years ago, when the United Church of God started, I had gotten some encouraging emails from him, from somebody that was somewhat a stranger, but I never forgot them, and that has always stuck with me. So he's worked with different places, but currently he is the faith and family reporter for the Washington Times. He's actually also been on a blog called getreligion.org that a number of people in our organization follow. Welcome to Inside United, Mark.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I gave you a little introduction there, but I'd like you to tell us a little bit about yourself in your own words and tell us about just what you're doing right now.
As you mentioned, I've followed developments within the Churches of God for quite a number of years. In the 1990s, I wrote about a number of those developments for Christianity Today magazine. And I've kept an eye on developments within the community ever since then. I followed United from the inception. And as I say, I've sort of kept watch on the other groups that are associated in the Churches of God community. I think the stories are very important. The history is very important. And I sincerely hope there will be more history written before it's too late, before we lose everyone associated with that generation. Because quite honestly, I'd hate to see only one version, shall we say, of that history presented to the world. We need to get a full picture of what has happened within the Churches of God going back to the beginnings of United and even before, especially before, because it is a fascinating and I would say uniquely American story.
Well, it is. And we all have somewhat of a common beginning, you know, with the Worldwide Church of God, which is a monolith, kind of a big rock that frankly shattered.
Yes.
And you know, we have been strung out in different places. United Church of God has been one of the bigger groups that has come from the Worldwide Church of God. One thing that we'd like to get into, what we talk about today, is about our freedom to worship. Many in our organization are concerned about where we go and how we react to this. And, you know, with hearing about deplatforming of big organizations and measures to counter that have been considered. Talk to us about faith and freedom and the media.
Well, it was a European politician, he was either from Denmark or from the Netherlands, I forget, who very famously said it is difficult to make predictions, especially when they concern the future. Now, all that means is for me to say that I am not a prophet, nor am I the son of a prophet. I'm a simple newspaper reporter. I do, however, believe that we are going to face increasing challenges to religious freedom, and most importantly, the free exercise. What you're hearing in some quarters is that, hey, if you want to believe something in the privacy of your home, if you want to believe something when you gather together with other people for weekly worship, go ahead, knock yourself out. It's when you or I or anyone else choose to take our beliefs to work, to school, in the marketplace when we run a business. That's where, or even when we provide social services and charitable services, that's where the state is going to become, I think, more and more coercive, or at least try to be more and more coercive of individual belief and actions. We just had, about 2 weeks ago, I think, maybe it was 10 days ago, the Supreme Court of the United States released an opinion in Fulton versus City of Philadelphia that said, no, the City of Philadelphia cannot deplatform a social services agency that provided foster care services, because that agency said it is against our religious beliefs to support same-sex couples, so we won't place children with same-sex couples. Mm-hmm. Now, there were plenty of other agencies in the city of Philadelphia more than willing to do that. And in fact, this agency in the Fulton case referred people to those agencies. But the city of Philadelphia said, look, unless you're going to bow the knee to what we want, we won't do business with you, we won't contract with you, we won't fund you. You know, and you can essentially go pound sand, as the saying goes. The Supreme Court said, and unanimously, 9-0, said, no, Philadelphia, you cannot, city of Philadelphia, that is, you cannot discriminate against this social service agency because of their religious beliefs. Now, you've also got the case of Jack Phillips, the baker, who's near Denver. He's had a business for a number of years, and there are certain kinds of cakes that his religion and his belief won't allow him to make. He won't make Halloween cakes.
Right.
He won't make what we could call X-rated or adult-themed cakes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he won't use his talents, his skills, to create a message supporting same-sex marriage or transgender revealing or some other things, just like he wouldn't do a Halloween cake. Well, the sexual activists have come after him. They keep bringing him before the civil rights authorities there, and they keep dragging him into court. And the idea, I think, is to either force him to comply or to go out of business. And his business has been hurt substantially by this. So these are challenges that we face in this society.
Jack Phillips was, you know, at the National Religious Broadcasters Conference. I'm sure you heard him. He was quite eloquent fellow. He was interviewed by actually the attorney. She was really quite a sharp lady, Kristen Wagoner, right, who brought his case and argued it in front of the Supreme Court. And I was just really amazed as to his humility, as to, you know, what he said. Well, one thing that he said that they asked him to do was to bake a cake depicting Satan smoking pot. You know, that is, I mean, how can you ask any human being, you know, to do that? You know, my roots are coming from my parents coming from the Soviet Union, where religion was totally restricted. It was totally restricted until 1991, when some of those areas became free. But what I'm seeing right now is just escalation into that type of thing, where somebody wants to control the innards of your faith, of the things that you think. And it's just our country, which was based on the ability to be able to worship God in the way that you choose, is greatly threatened. Do you see this, Mark, as going in a direction that may be fatal?
Well, it could be. Again, I don't claim to be a prophet. I do believe that at the end of times, as the age draws to a close, we are going to see increasing levels of persecution and opposition, shall we say, to people living peaceably. You know, Jack Phillips, the baker, doesn't stand on the street corner and try to force people to believe what he believes. He just wants to run his little bake shop and run his business as his conscience dictates. Mm-hmm. And yet for some folks, even though there are dozens of other bake shops, and if my memory serves me correctly, when I interviewed Mr. Phillips a few weeks ago, he said, there's one across the street or in the other side of the shopping center, whatever, that will do the kinds of cakes these people want. But that's not good enough. They have to force this man to bow to their will. I think we're going to see more of those challenges in a lot of spheres as the end times approach, including, of course, the question of Sabbath observance, mm-hmm, and the right to observe the Sabbath. But there is some good news that is coming up in the middle of all this. So it may be fatal, but not just yet.
One thing I can tell our people, in fact, we had a focus meeting today at our home office. I said, coming back from the NRB, Now, when we fear, like, we're the only ones, and, you know, we're kind of singled out. No, we're not. You know, there are a lot of people who are our friends, you know, from the standpoint of having our religious freedoms be challenged. And we'll kind of bind together and kind of stand up to, you know, to these things at this time. So it was good. I feel a very healthy exercise to be there last week and to be able to be with others who have the same types of problems.
Well, you know, it's very interesting, but 46 years ago, if I'm doing the math correctly, there was a case before the United States Supreme Court called TWA versus Hardison.
Oh, yes.
H-A-R-D-I-S-O-N. And Mr. Hardison was a member of a group known as the Worldwide Church of God. He was an airline mechanic. He became converted. He wanted to have the Sabbath off. And both the airline and his union fought his accommodation for religious exercise because they said it would be too much of a burden on the company. Now, you know how big Trans World Airlines was back in the day.
Yeah.
It would be too much of a burden to rearrange schedules so that one poor soul could, you know, have off on the Sabbath. And I'm sure, I didn't know Mr. Hardison, but I'm going to guess that he would have been willing to work every Sunday in the book if he had had his Sabbaths free. Now, what isn't widely known, I think, about the Hardison case is that even though Larry Hardison was not a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, he was a member of the Worldwide Church of God, the Seventh-day Adventist Church stepped up and supplied legal help and I think helped fund Mr. Hardison's appeals to the Supreme Court, because even in 1975, there were a great number of Seventh-day Adventists in the United States. Today, the number of Adventists is about 1 million, by the way. And those people need protection for their jobs as well. And in fact, in the last 2 years, the last two terms of the Supreme Court, the justices have twice denied cases that deal with this Sabbath question, but they've also said, look, give us a case that really attacks this. And there were technicalities that I really can't get into on this because I'm not a lawyer, but the two of the justices at least said, give us something that really goes to the heart of this issue and we'll consider it. So, you know, the good news is a lot of people want to support your religious freedom because your religious freedom is the religious freedom of everyone else. If Mr. Hardison, for example, or anyone else can get the Sabbath off, that means people who want to have Sunday off for their religious observance get a leg up in court and with their employers. And if your rights are protected, everyone's rights are protected. And that's a very important element of all this.
Let's go back to deplatforming. Any more advice that you could give to us about evasive measures to take?
Well, it's quite a challenge because with social media these days, you need to have a platform in order to reach people, in order to communicate a message. Now, I don't care if that message is about your favorite cooking recipes, your fantasy baseball league, or your understanding of the Bible, of prophecy, of religion. So I guess in the religious sphere, the best advice that I could give is the advice that Jesus gave to his disciples when he said to be as wise as serpents, but as harmless as doves. I don't know if it is profitable in this day and age to whack somebody over the head with a 2x4 and say to them, if you don't accept everything we know about the mark of the beast and Bible prophecy and what's going to happen in the end times, you know, you're going to have an unhappy future. Instead, I think, or I would believe and submit, that the best or better approach would be to talk about a God who has concern for other people, a God who cares about each individual life out there and shall we say, the good news mm-hmm. of what lies ahead and what is available to people. And if you start from that perspective, particularly on the social media platforms, I believe you'll stand a much better chance of not running afoul of whoever runs this, because, you know, I can't imagine Facebook or YouTube being all that much against a message that says, hey, God loves you, he cares about you, and has a good future for you.
You know, one thing, there are people, you know, in our organization, you know, as others that, you know, have that view. Let's talk about the positive, the good news. Others that say, look, we have to cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet, you know, tell my people their sins. And I'm just wondering, you know, we need to have that message of Jeremiah, you know, where we poke people in the eye. But I don't know if that is exactly the thing that we need to be doing right now. You know, we may come to that point. You know, even this person in the UK, I believe, that was arrested by the police for preaching. You know, at first I was incensed, you know, about how that happened. But then I saw the video. You know, he was out in the street, you know, really belittling people. And, you know, that's not the place to do it. And I don't believe that our job is to say those things about anybody. You know, there may be that place. Let the Bible speak for itself. But I don't believe that we need to really bring persecution upon ourselves. We just did a, I just sent a member subscriber or a subscriber letter out to about 235,000 of our subscribers. And I had a little survey there asking them what they would like to hear more about, you know, what type of subjects that they would want. I had a list of 12 choices. Number one was, I would like to come closer to God. I would like to have a closer relationship with God. And I was surprised. I mean, every day the returns came in and stayed, that was the very, very top. Number two was, I would like to have a better understanding of the Bible. Better understanding, you know, of the Bible. Number three was, I'd like to learn to cope better in these times. And prophecy, you know, there was number four, you know, down the list. And at the very bottom was addictions, finances, and other subjects like that, which are important as well. But number one was those things that really people are thinking about. And I think that even at the NRB, where we were just at, a statistic was quoted quite a few times, that of people who are unchurched right now, 80% of those people know that something is wrong with this world, that things are off the rails, and are looking for somebody to give guidance. And if we could kind of listen to what people are asking for, what people are yearning for, maybe we can make some progress.
Without question. And, you know, one of the things that I think was very attractive in years gone by that the Worldwide Church would do with its advertising in Reader's Digest, which once upon a time was a more common meeting ground for society. You know, they advertised a booklet called The Seven Laws of Success and yeah. how to achieve your goals in life. They didn't start out with, you know, here's the beast of Revelation. And if 50 years ago, someone was advertising a booklet on how to live a happy life and a successful life, mm-hmm. maybe folks haven't changed all that much.
It's interesting, when I went to Ukraine and showed them some of the booklets we had. Actually, we had about a half a dozen that were translated into Russian about 30 years ago. And one of them was The Seven Laws of Success. And that they raved about that book, of course, coming out of communism, you know, for 70 years. They looked upon sure. that Seven Laws of Success, you know, here's the things that we can do. This is a fantastic booklet. And they, you know, took it upon themselves to republish it.
When you meet people's most deeply felt needs, their heart needs, as the phrasing goes, then you gain entree, I think, to deal with people on other levels and teach them about other subjects. You know, again, to whack folks over the head with either a 2x4 or your Thompson Chain Reference Bible, and you know, say, listen, you gotta accept all this or else. That's not going to work anymore, I think, in large measure, because one thing that has changed in the last 50, 60, 70 years is we're a less biblically literate society. Mm-hmm. People, even if they were atheists, people 50 years ago or longer would have some understanding of what the Bible says and what it contains. Now, if you mention certain things and certain concepts in the Bible, you might as well be talking Klingon from the Star Trek series.
Yeah.
You know, folks don't grasp it. So first, you have to establish, I think, some common ground and a basis for where people are able to trust you and trust the information that you convey. And again, in terms of the deplatforming question and what will be and won't be acceptable on YouTube, I do believe, and I could be wrong, but I do believe that positive, uplifting messages that begin with a focus on how God cares for people, how he wants them to succeed, and these are the tools for success. Laws of health, mm-hmm. for example. We're in a health crisis today, apart from the pandemic. Laws of health and how to live better. You start with that, and then you gain someone's trust, and you can lead them into other more serious discussions.
I had a person today that wrote to me. He said, "I really want to talk religion to other people," which, the way he put it, kind of frightened me a little bit. When somebody just wants to go, "Hey, I want to talk religion with you." Whoa! But I said, "Look, you know, first of all, before you can quote talk religion, you've got to have a relationship of some sort. You've got to have a friendly conversation. You have to have something that comes up. I talk to religion. I mean, I'm a member of Rotary Club. I talk about religious things. They know I'm the president of the church here. Some of them get our magazine, and some of them watch the Beyond Today television program. But that's taken a number of years, seeing them on a weekly basis, developing a friendship, them, you know, showing that we are people of integrity, and me respecting them, you know, as people of integrity. Now we can start to having a discussion about good and evil and right and wrong and morality and immorality. While I'm thinking about this, the people not knowing what's in the Bible, somebody commented that Amazon may possibly deplatform and not sell the Bible. Will we ever get to that point, Mark?
I doubt it, seriously. I think, well, I don't know what Jeff Bezos' religion is, and I won't even hazard a guess, but I imagine that part of his moral compass, shall we say, involves doing those things that make money for his company. And I would imagine, just looking at their business overall, that Amazon is one of the largest, if not the largest, sellers of Bibles mm-hmm. in the world today. And Amazon to wake up tomorrow and say, "No, we don't want X number of millions of dollars worth of business because we don't like the book, and it's the Bible after all." I don't see that happening, quite honestly, because they make too much money doing it.
Well, I think that we're about winding down here. I've really, really enjoyed talking to you, Mark. I really have. It's just been great. Maybe kind of tell us a little bit about Washington Times. We see your name, you know, on the front page. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the Washington Times will celebrate, God willing, its 40th anniversary next year. We were started as a voice to provide an alternative look at the news in Washington, because the Washington Post, nice people though they are, they've had for many years, for decades, a certain orientation in their news coverage. And the Washington Times tries to promote a positive view of America, a positive view of family life, and a positive view of faith, so that people can understand what's going on. We don't avoid the serious issues. I've got a story that I'm going to work on tomorrow that could be a little explosive, and I had one of those last week. But we try to give people also the positive stories about faith and about freedom that you don't see elsewhere, so that they can take pride in the country in which they live and be better informed mm-hmm. about the times in which they live. Let me just say, the website is www.washingtontimes.com. We do make a certain number of articles available for free. And yes, we do encourage folks to subscribe digitally to get the full package. But either way, if you only sample it or if you dive in, I believe you'll find some very good, very solid news reporting. We also have an award-winning sports section. They swept the Society of Professional Journalists chapter's awards in Washington about 2 weeks ago. And I'm proud of the paper. It's a great place to work.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us on Inside United. Thank you for joining us. Write to us at podcast@ucg.org, podcast@ucg.org. If you have any questions or comments, we always welcome them. You can find us on your favorite Android or Apple podcasting app, also on the ucg.org website. On the main menu, click or tap on podcast. Also, you can find us on Spotify. We're on Spotify as well. So once again, thank you very much for joining us here. So have a great week. We'll see you again next week. Thank you.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.